What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Sean Jones NBA Show. I'm recording this on Thursday, June 13th, and we had Game 3 of the NBA Finals between the Boston Celtics and the Dallas Mavericks last night, in a game where Boston continued their strong play on the road, taking this one in Dallas 106-99 to go up 3-0 in the NBA Finals. As we know, no team has ever come back from down 0-3 in any series at any point in the NBA. So although this series is just about wrapped up for all intents and purposes, going to talk all about Game 3, the struggles the Mavericks have had, what's made Boston so good, and talk about some bigger picture stuff with the Celtics, as well as a very strange narrative that has gone around with this team that was leading up to the finals. So with all that said, let's get into it. So with this being the first game in Dallas, there was a lot of people who thought the Mavericks would be able to bounce back and steal this game, especially with the news of Kristaps Porzingis being out, not only for this game, but his status for the remainder of the series being in serious question. Not as much of a talking point at this point, just given that the Celtics are up 3-0, but again, the Mavericks were favored going into this game, and they got off to a really nice start. They went on a quick 9-2 run to start the game. Kyrie got a blow-up by layup. Luka hit a three. Derrick Jones Jr. got a steal and finished on a fast break. They got a couple stops. Then Luka had a tough finish through Jrue Holiday before a Boston timeout. But after the timeout, the run continued. The Mavericks would eventually build up a lead as big as 13. They were up 22-9 to start this game. And they had a lot of things working for them. The Mavericks were getting Al Horford switched onto Kyrie and attacking him. They were getting downhill to the basket much more than they had in the first couple games of this series, probably largely due in part to the lack of rim protection without Porzingis out there. They were getting Tatum switched onto Luka, and he was going to work on him. The Celtics looked like a little bit of a mess on both ends of the court. They were not containing Dallas getting to the basket and a little sloppy on the offensive end and not making a lot of shots similarly to how they started game two. And there was really just no resistance from Boston at the rim early in this game. And Dallas's shot profile looked a lot better than what it had in the first couple games, mostly taking just three-pointers and shots at the rim and getting away from some of the mid-range stuff they had been falling in love with in the first couple games, largely due in part to Boston forcing them into shooting those shots. But the Celtics then responded with a quick 11-0 run to cut it to 25-23. The Mavericks then were only up 31-30 after the first quarter, so a little disappointing that they had blown really that basically the entire lead before the quarter was even over. And then at that point, the Mavs offense turned back to looking a lot like what it had in the first couple games. A lot of isolation ball. The shots from outside weren't falling as much as they were in the first quarter. And really, for the first time this series, Jason Tatum started to heat up in a way that he hasn't. He started this game 6-for-10 from the field, 3-for-5 from three, was knocking down outside shots, something that he just really has not done at any point in this series. And Dallas had some rotation adjustments as well in this quarter. They put in Tim Hardaway Jr. for his first big minutes of the series. And Jason Kidd even played 11 guys deep in the rotation in the first half of this one. But the Mavs started really slow in the second quarter. They had only 2 points in the first 6 minutes of the second. They started 1-of-9 from the field. And it was Kyrie Irving that finally got it going, and he was the one that was keeping them in this in the first half. He had 20 points on 8 of 14 shooting. After not making a single three-pointer in the first two games, he was 4-for-5 from 3 in just the first half of this game. And there was some really good back-and-forth action in the late second. It was a little sloppy across the board. Both teams only scored 20 points. But the Mavericks found themselves leading in halftime. However, only up 1 point despite Jaylen Brown, Derrick White, and Jrue Holiday having only a combined 13 points on 5 of 19 shooting in the first half. The Celtics were 9 of 27 from 3 as a team. They shot only 40.9% from the field in the first half, and Luka and Kyrie combined for 37, the best that those two had played at the same time at any point in the series. Yet, like I said, Mavericks were only up 51-50 at halftime. So this was really similar to the last game where it felt like Dallas really should have been able to capitalize on some of Boston's shooting struggles more than they did. And so the fact that they lost that lead so quickly ended up being pretty detrimental for this team in this game, because the Celtics then come out in the third quarter, start 6-for-6 from the field. They build up a 7-point lead, 66-59. They start that quarter 16-8. And all of Dallas's bad habits just started reverting. Luka looking like a mess defensively. Too much isolation ball. Just getting absolutely nothing from the role players or anything outside of Luka and Kyrie. And Luka started to really struggle in the second half offensively as well. So Kyrie was really the only thing the Mavs had working for them down the stretch of this third quarter, which turned into being a very dominant third quarter by the Celtics. They outscored the Mavericks 35-19 and were up 15 points going into the fourth, led largely in part by Jaylen Brown, who, after being very quiet in the first half, had a huge third quarter, 15 points on 6-of-9 shooting, as well as 3 assists in that quarter. And after 31 points in the first quarter, the Mavericks had only 39 in the second and third quarters combined. So their offense immediately went back to looking very ugly in this one, as it had in the first two games. And going into the fourth, it got even uglier. The beginning of the fourth was about as disastrous as it could have been for Dallas as well. First play, Luka gets an offensive foul, then Jaylen Brown hits a three, then Kyrie gets an offensive foul, then Derek White hits a three. Suddenly, the Celtics are up 21 points, 91-70, and they are in the midst of a 41-19 run to start the second half. But as you can tell, this was quite a game of runs, because the Celtics then quickly, they turned into quite of a mess. The Dallas defense really ramped up after those first two threes in the fourth quarter, largely due to big impact from Josh Green and Derek Lively on that end of the court to close this game. But the Celtics then, they went into doing a little bit too much iso ball, taking some bad shots, some Tatum step back threes, limited ball movement, similar to that stretch they had in the early third quarter of game one, where they just were not executing to the same level offensively that they had through most of the series. And they actually went a full 8 minutes of game time, scoring only 2 points. And the Mavs go on a 22-2 run to cut it all the way down to a 1-point game at 93-92. And before the Mavs got the last 2 points of that run, it was sitting at 93-90 for quite a while, over 2 minutes of game time, and both teams start to look a little messy offensively, got a little bit ugly, as you'd expect in the fourth quarter of a must-win NBA Finals team with a Dallas having their back against the wall. And Luka started to implode a bit. He was missing some bunnies near the basket, making shots more difficult than he needed to. He then fouls out with about 4 minutes remaining, trying to take a charge in transition. Dallas challenges it, but the play stands. The Celtics then start, coincidentally, after Luka leaves, or ironically, I should say, start hitting a bunch of shots from outside. And then offensively for Dallas, it turned into Kyrie or bust, Kyrie hero ball late. Either he had to just start chucking up shots, or he was doing a pick and roll with Lively, but they were sending doubles at him, blitzing him on the perimeter. He had a couple nice passes down to Lively to get a couple buckets. But then Jaylen Brown took over, hit some huge shots down the stretch. He was the closer for this team in this game. There was a semi-questionable call where Horford was falling out of bounds and Green maybe pushed him, but they didn't call it. But it didn't end up mattering. The Mavs just could not hit shots at the end of this game when they needed to. And Mazzulla did his classic fouling while up six to avoid the Mavs shooting threes to keep it a two-possession game. And the Celtics closed this game on a 13-7 run to win it 106-99, nearly an identical score to game two. And to me, this was just like the most classic finish to an NBA game ever. I've seen this a million times where team gets down big, they claw back, claw back, claw back, get so close to taking the lead and winning it, and they just run out of gas down the stretch. I know a lot of it had to do probably with Luka fouling out, but even when Dallas was going on that run, I never really thought they were going to win this game just because of how strong Boston has been late in games in this postseason. But also the amount of energy it took for the Mavs to make that run, and it's not like the Celtics were really going to score only 8 points in the entire quarter in this one. So Celtics win this. They go up 3-0. And the star of this one to me was Jaylen Brown. He was spectacular in this game, especially in the second half. He had 30 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists, a block, shot 55% from the field. Those 8 assists were a playoff career high for him. Just in the second half alone, he had 24, 5, and 3 on 10 of 16 shooting, including 9 of those points coming in the fourth quarter when they needed the most. He has been the guy for them in this series. And I can't speak highly enough of the improvements that he's made as a player. It was just a couple years ago, or even just last year in the postseason, where there was memes being made about this guy because he couldn't dribble with his left hand and he had questionable decision making and would have costly turnovers for Boston in very important moments and would have these games every once in a while where he can't buy a shot. And he was just a mess offensively, inconsistent effort-wise defensively. But he has improved so much in all of these areas this season. He is so much better as a decision maker, not only with the ball in his hands in terms of playmaking, finding the open man, making the right reads, but also picking and choosing his spots. It seems like whenever they need a big bucket, he's willing and able to go get that for him, but he's never forcing it. It's really when they need him. But he's super aggressive when they need him to be, but also is okay taking a quarter to let Jason Tatum do his thing or let Derek White and Drew Holiday get some shots if they're hot or help reintegrate Kristaps Porzingis like in game one. He is just so improved across the board, even as a ball handler. You know, I wouldn't necessarily say the guy's a absolute expert in that area still, but he's better than he was. And he's so decisive getting to the basket. He has strong drives to the rim consistently, better than anybody on Boston. He is an elite shot maker. He can make difficult shots. He takes some shots where you're like, I don't know if that's a good one, but then they go in way more often than you expect them to. And he's been so impressive as a defender as well. Luka has been his main assignment on that end of the court, and he's done a spectacular job at slowing him down. He's also been super clutch for them. He scored 2 of the last 4 buckets for them in this game when they badly needed them. As I said, they went 8 minutes where they only scored 2 points. Those 2 points were by Jaylen Brown, of course. And he also sparked the run that gave him the lead. I mean, he had 15 points in that third quarter when the Celtics went on the big run to give them that 21-point lead altogether. And to me, Jaylen Brown is the biggest reason that Boston is going to get over the hump this season. Because as much as the Porzingis addition has helped them, he hasn't been out there. As much as the Drew Holiday addition has helped them, and it has helped them a ton, they've still lost a lot of other things on this team from last year between Marcus Smart, Malcolm Brogdon, Robert Williams, Grant Williams. You know, it's not, I know we get to talk about their additions all the time, but with Porzingis out, they really traded those 4 guys for basically just Drew Holiday in this postseason. And so Drew Holiday is impactful, but he's hasn't been so impactful to the point where he can make up for the loss of all 4 of those guys. So a huge reason why the Celtics have been so much better and more consistent in this postseason is because of internal improvement and development from the guys they already had, most notably Jaylen Brown. Last year, he, as I said, was an inconsistent second option. This year, he's arguably the first option on this team. At least in the postseason, that's what it seemed like. In the biggest moments, he's the one taking the shots. He is the one making the plays on both ends of the court. He guards the other team's best player on a night-to-night basis. And he's just so much more consistent. He's so much of a smarter player than he was, and he's just so improved in every aspect. So I can't applaud him enough just for the strides that he's made, because I'll be on record, I've been not the biggest Jaylen Brown guy. All of the things that I called out in terms of his flaws in the past are things that were pretty major red flags for me. I had him and in the 25 to 30 range as a player, but I think now with his improvements, I wouldn't fault anyone for sneaking him into that top 20. I think just with his two-way play, his consistency on the offensive end now, and him proving it on the absolute biggest stage without having really any of those total stinker games that he's had many of over the past few years, it's hard not to be impressed with Jaylen Brown in not only this game, not only this series, not only this postseason, but this entire season, especially given the contract that he received in the offseason and got quite a bit of backlash for. As I also mentioned, Jason Tatum finally got it going a bit in this game. And I know he wasn't making all the plays down the stretch, but he was huge because he kept them afloat. That first half I mentioned, White, Brown, and Holiday combined for only 13 points on 5 and 19, and they got some big shots out of Sam Hauser as well. But he had 20 points in the first half, and they needed every bit of those 20 points because they got down big early, he helped them claw back, and they could have been down 10, 15 points if he hadn't gotten it going a little bit from outside. So kudos to Tatum for finally knocking some shots down. It is kind of weird. It feels like he does play better on the road most of the time, kind of inexplicably. But he still did leave a good bit to be desired. I thought he got a little too jump shot happy in this game after his hot start. As I mentioned, he started 6-for-10 from the field. But even just to finish the second quarter, he was 1-for-5, with 3 of those being step back 3-pointers. He did not finish this game well. After that 6-for-10 start, he was only 5-for-16 the rest of the game. He started 3-of-5 from 3, finished only 1-of-8 from 3. And that's been kind of his problem, is sometimes when he starts making it from outside, it's almost a blessing and a curse because they're going in, but then he gets too enamored by his jump shot and takes too many bad shots. And I thought it was pretty hilarious in the he was mic'd up for the game, and they had a quote of him on the bench saying, "Hey guys, we need to stop shooting so many step back threes unless it's late in the shot clock." And he's looking around, and I'm like, dude, you are the only one out there doing that. But yeah, I just think that he needs to be more disciplined with his shot selection. He was not aggressive getting to the basket at all in this one. He had been in the previous games, but he wasn't making shots and he was deferring a little bit. But in this one, if he had stayed aggressive while also getting to the basket, I think it would have done wonders for him and he wouldn't have shot so poorly in the second half. But still, very important game for him in terms of the first half, keeping them in this one. Jrue Holiday, Derek White, they did what they do. Nothing spectacular for them in these games, nothing flashy, but they made big plays down the stretch. Derek White hit some huge three-pointers. He was 4-for-9 from outside. Jrue Holiday, a rather quiet game, but just the intangibles this guy has out there. We know what he's doing on both ends of the court. He had an absurd pass on that drive where he jumped and kicked it out to White to the top of the wing, and the ball hit the net, but it was perfect pass and just ridiculous for him to even see that. That was a big play for them down the stretch. So those guys just continue to make plays and be important for them, especially in clutch time on the defensive end. Then Sam Hauser was huge for them. He was 3-for-3 from 3 in the first half, and nobody else had it going except for Tatum, as I mentioned. It was really the Hauser and Tatum show in that first half. Hauser had 9 points, which was more than any Celtic other than Tatum in that first half. And I think outside of his shooting, which we know he has in his repertoire, I was wildly impressed with his defensive effort. I mean, they were getting him switched on to Luka and other guys, and he was more than holding his own. No one's saying he's a defensive stopper, but I think he looks like the kind of guy that would be your prototypical let's screen him onto the ball handler and attack him type player, but that strategy was not working. He locked up Luka a couple times, forced to steal another time, and he played super well for them in that first half and was really big for them. So that was a nice little twist for Boston there. And then Xavier Tillman was awesome. The big question mark coming into this one was, how would the Celtics manage without Porzingis? We hadn't seen them play Dallas without him to this point. And Tillman answered the bell. I was on record coming into this one saying I thought they need to do more small ball. But basically, whatever you do, do not play Luke Kornet, which they did not play. So that was a smart call by Mazzulla to roll with Tillman over Kornet. And I was unsure if Tillman would be able to hang out there, but he was a +9 in only 11 minutes. He had a +22 net rating. He had 2 blocks, 4 rebounds. He hit a 3-pointer. He was spectacular guarding Luka on switches. He had a block on him going to the basket at 1.2. And so they really didn't need to try the small ball thing in this game because Tillman, he played well. I mean, his forte is defense, and so he played well on that end, and they're not really going to ask much of out of him on offense. But he, as I said, he hit a three-pointer, spread the floor a little bit as well. So that was a nice little wrinkle for Boston as well. I'm not going to quite call it the Xavier Tillman game. Not sure he had that big of an impact, but definitely a positive showing from him and a just nice thing for Boston to know that they have in the back pocket if Porzingis cannot go in any of the games for the remaining part of the series as well. And the Celtics as a whole, they've been so spectacular in clutch play. There's been this narrative that they are bad in crunch time, and over the past few years, they have been. They were a minus 11 in clutch time last year in the postseason, a minus 14 in the postseason in clutch time in 2022, and then back in 2020, they were minus 10. So they have largely been bad in the postseason in clutch time, but not in this postseason. They so far have played six clutch games. They are 6-0 in those games. They are a plus 46.9 in terms of net rating in clutch time in this postseason. They have a nearly 127 offensive rating and an 80 defensive rating. So they have been very good offensively, but absolutely the elite, elite, elite on defense. Just teams are absolutely, they're just not even scoring on them. They've been so suffocating on that end, and that really is the bread and butter of what makes this team so great. They obviously had a historically good offense, but they're so good on that end as well. And just looking down the line, I mean, the numbers match the eye test. They had that miraculous comeback to Indiana in game one of that series and then go on to dominate overtime after Brown hit the game-tying three to send it there. Then we go to game three. They complete an 18-point second-half comeback to Indiana, finish that game on an 8-0 run to win by 3 points. Then game four, a lot of the same. Indiana's leading in that one. They go on a 7-0 run in game four to win that one by three. So time and time again, they've been great in this series. In game two, they made some big-time plays to seal that game with the Derek White block on PJ Washington that would have cut it down to a 3-point game. Then Brown immediately answers on the offensive end after that. And then in this one, they end this game on a 13-7 run after Dallas had cut it all the way down to 1 point. So they've been about as good as you could possibly be. And a lot of that has to do with how good they've been defensively. A lot of it has to do with the increased level of decision making and basketball IQ on the offensive end between the growth of Brown in that area, the more willingness of Tatum to defer instead of settling for bad long jumpers, and the just upgrade in IQ from a guy like Marcus Smart to a guy like Drew Holiday. And so it cannot be understated how good they've been in clutch time in this postseason. And I said this before the series started. This was one of my big factors that I called out to say this could decide the series, because Dallas has the reputation of being the clutch team, that they've got the two best closers, blah, 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 what everyone said. But in reality, that's not how it's played out, because people forget that clutch is not just about scoring. It's also about defense. And nobody's been better on defense in the clutch than Boston in this postseason. And that has been their winning formula. They've finished multiple clutch games on 7-0 runs or bigger to win the games in this postseason. So kudos to them for being so spectacular. This series, as I said, is probably over. We can go ahead and call it. But I'll save a lot of my deep dives on the Celtics roster and everything for when they do actually win this. So I do want to pivot to the Mavs side of things here, specifically Luka, because he was truly so awful last night for so many reasons. He started the game 5-for-7, finished it 6-for-20 in the remainder of the game. So wildly inefficient, could not knock anything down. And the crazy part is he somehow was even worse than that defensively. Continues to just put in zero effort on that end of the court. Be just pathetic. A traffic cone. Zero effort. It's the NBA Finals, and the guy still can't find the want and desire to at least compete on that end of the court. ESPN showed a stat that said he had a 68% blow-by percentage on drives this series, which is the worst of any series they could track of any player in the last 10 years. And that's bad in itself, but what's even worse is the second worst in that span is Luka in the first round this year at 65%, and the third worst in that span is Luka in the second round at 59%. So he's had, in all accounts, the worst perimeter defensive effort maybe ever of anybody in this series that we've seen. I mean, like, especially for a high-level star, a superstar, just the lack of effort is so, so concerning. And the worst part is that's not even all of it. He was so sloppy with the ball in this game and in this series. He's averaging 5 turnovers a game. He's foul baiting like crazy. I mean, he had Peyton Pritchard switched onto him at one point in this game, and instead of just going right into him when he was in the paint, he's pump faking, leaning into him, trying to get him to jump into him to get the foul call. Meanwhile, he's got 6 inches on this guy, and if you could quantify strength, a lot of strength on him too. Like, there's no reason for him not to just go straight up. There's highlight reels of him taking 3-pointers in guys' face, and instead of trying to make the shot, he's just falling down immediately. He's flopping. He just wants to get the call. And then the worst part is when he doesn't get the call, then he's not running back on defense. So then it's a 5-on-4. It's a fast break because the guy is so concerned about getting calls that he doesn't care to get back on defense. He doesn't care to even try to make the shot. And then when he doesn't get the call, he's bitching to the refs nonstop. It is just really difficult to watch. He is relentless with it. He's not even going up straight offensively. There were some plays late in the game, too, where he's like near the basket. He had this one play where Tatum was right on him under the basket. He tried to pump fake. Tatum didn't go for it. And instead of just going straight up, trying to use his strength, he does this weird fade around where it's like just the way he contorted his body just to try to get away from where Tatum was, turned a very makeable layup into a super difficult fadeaway, like lunging out of bounds type shot. So just all accounts, terrible in this game. And then he fouls out. He had 4 fouls in the fourth quarter of this game. And then on the play, he fouls out. He's screaming at the bench to challenge it, which was never going to be overturned. And you can say what you want about that call, whether it could have been a no call or whatever. But if you're Luka, why are you even putting yourself in position to have the refs make that call? You are not going to get a charge drawn in transition like that. His feet were clearly not fully set. Maybe in a half-court setting where he's set, something like that gets called. But if you have 5 fouls, just don't fall down there. Don't fall down. And the funniest thing is I'm like, he's been getting blown by all series, like I said. Now you don't want to get blown by? You got 5 fouls in a must-win back-against-the-wall game, 1-possession game, and that's when you want to try to take a charge and not get blown by? So it's just like stupid play. All series long, he's letting guys blow by him, and then as soon as he gets 5 fouls, that's when he wants to be aggressive. It was just low IQ basketball play, and he was terrible in the fourth quarter again last night. Only 2 points, 1-of-5 shooting. As I mentioned, 4 fouls, so twice as many fouls as he even had points. And then in the fourth quarter for the series, he's shooting 3-for-15 from the floor, 0-4 from 3. He has 8 total points in the fourth quarter. That's 2.7 per game. This is a guy that averaged 34 points per game in the regular season, said by many to be one of, if not the best, closer in the NBA. He has just not shown up. So he's playing losing basketball in this series. I don't care what his stats say. I know he's averaging 39-6 on 47%. That is misleading if you watch the games because he's also averaging 5 turnovers per game. He's shooting 59% from the free throw line, only 32% from 3. And like I said, maybe the single worst defensive effort from a superstar in a postseason series in NBA history. And he's looked like a shell of himself offensively from just a comfortability standpoint, from getting to his spots. He was doing it a little bit earlier in the series, but last night, he was missing shots he makes all the time and making shots more difficult than they need to be because he's so concerned about trying to get fouled and complaining to the refs about it when it doesn't happen. So to me, this series is a stain on his reputation and resume to a degree. I mean, we're going to look back and see he averaged a 30-point near double-double, whatever, but he's so concerned on the wrong things. He's concerned with the wrong things. He needs to be worrying about where he's supposed to be defensively and staying in front of guys and doing the little things and hustling and making sure his guys are getting the ball in their spots and just doing whatever he can to actually make a shot. Don't worry about the refs. So his reputation, I think, is definitely taking a hit. You can see it on social media. People are ripping him apart and deservingly so. He is still a top 2 player in my mind after Jokic, but all of the things that make him so talented and spectacular and special, they mean nothing if he's going to play like this defensively and be so out of it in terms of his headspace. Because he needs to take a hard look in the mirror and evaluate his priorities on the court. Like I mentioned, he is just focused on the wrong things. And until he gets focused on the right things, it's going to be very difficult for him to win a championship as currently constructed, because champions don't do what he's doing out on the court right now. They try on defense. They focus on the next play. They get other guys involved. They try to get the easiest shot possible, not the most difficult shot possible. So very disappointing game from Luka. Disappointing series across the board for Luka. Still a phenomenal player, but you expect more out of a guy as good as he is. And in this one, Kyrie finally played a little better. This was the first game where he got sufficient help from Kyrie. 35 points, 4 for 5 from 3. And I would say that Kyrie played a lot better than his 13 for 28 shooting would suggest. He had to start chucking shots a little bit at the end once Luka fouled out. But it was just too much to ask to have him go up against this defense as the only initiator, shot creator, to win a clutch time game. It would have taken a heroic performance out of him. And so he did about all that he could, and you can't be upset with anything he did tonight. But across the board, I also thought Jason Kidd wasn't particularly good in this game. He did a couple of things I liked. He pulled Maxi Kleber finally, only 8 minutes. He's 1 for 7 shooting in the series, 0 for 3 from three. The guy's out there getting cardio. He has as many fouls in this series as he does points, rebounds, and assists combined. He has 6 fouls and only 6 of those stats all put together. And he's got the highest defensive rating of anyone on the team. So he's been atrocious. So good call to pull him. At least he finally decided to take him out of the rotation, because he's been, unplayable in my opinion. And I did like that he rolled with Josh Green late and Derek Lively. I know he closes with Lively a lot, but he was playing really well down the stretch of that fourth quarter. I also thought Josh Green gave him some really good minutes, especially defensively late in that game, as an upgrade over Derek Jones Jr. Made a big three-pointer as well. But he played 11 guys in this game, and I don't mind switching up the rotation. It was actually one of the things that I suggested that he do. But to just throw everybody out there, I didn't love that. And the leash he gave some players versus other players made no sense to me, because the guy was going to live and die with Tim Hardaway Jr. out there. And let me tell you, he died, because Tim Hardaway was disastrous in this game. He was 0-5 from the field, 0-3 from three. He was taking ill-advised shots. I mean, a must-win series, and you've got Tim Hardaway Jr. isolating on the wing in the second half of a close game. He was getting attacked defensively. I mean, they were trying to switch him onto the main ball handler pretty much every time down the court, Boston was. He was a minus 16 in only 19 minutes, so they were plus 9 with him on the bench. He had a minus 43.2 net rating in this game, so just truly atrocious. I mean, they were in position to win when he wasn't out there, and when he was out there, they were getting demolished. And I just don't get it. Why didn't he try Exum or Hardy a little bit in that spot? They played 5 minutes combined. Exum went in for 2 minutes. Hardy went in for 3 minutes in little spurts, and he yanked him and never played him again after the first half. Meanwhile, Tim Hardaway Jr. is getting cooked defensively, can't hit the side of the rim offensively, and he's just throwing him out there and just going to see what happens for 20 minutes. So that made no sense to me. I would have preferred if he tried Hardy or Exum. Exum's a much better defender than Hardaway Jr. Hardy's a much better playmaker and more consistent offensive player than Hardaway Jr. So maybe he thought he could get a mix of both with Hardaway, but I don't agree, because I think I'd rather have Exum out there offensively, and I might even rather have Hardy out there defensively anyway. So I just don't really understand that move by Kidd. I didn't love that. I also didn't love the timeout he called in the fourth quarter. This is when the Mavs were in the midst of their big run. It had been a 20-2 run at that point. The crowd was going crazy. They had all of the momentum. Then as soon as the timeout ends, Luka immediately picks up 2 fouls to foul out. He subs in Tim Hardaway Jr. Boston regroups, finally gets it going, and they end the game on a 23-7 run, which was 23-9 after the timeout was called. So I didn't really totally get that. I know they were probably tired. He wanted to settle them down a bit, but Boston was also tired, and they needed to be settled down, and that helped them, and it probably got Luka out of the flow a little bit, hence why he picked up 2 fouls basically immediately after the timeout. So I didn't think it was a great Jason Kidd game. I don't think it's been a great Jason Kidd series. I called out some adjustments for them to try to make in my last episode. And at this point, he kind of tried some of them, not all of them. But I don't know if there really is an adjustment to make at this point. Some of the ones I called out, I wanted him to try to make Jason Tatum shoot more shots, which he did. And it came back to bite them a little in the first half, but it paid off in the long run, in my opinion. Like I said, he finished 5 of 16 from the floor in this one. He took 26 shots, only made 11 of them. I'm going to live with that all day. Tatum got his 30 points, but it was not a super efficient 30 points. So I thought that strategy worked a little bit, but unfortunately, they couldn't contain Tatum and the rest of the guys at the same time. The first half, they were containing everybody else, but Tatum was getting his. And then in the second half, they contained Tatum a bit, but then everybody else picked up their play. So I guess that's kind of how it works. It's a pick your poison in general, but I still think they probably should have tried to make Tatum shoot a little bit more, because when he was shooting in the second half, it wasn't going in, and the other guys did start to pick it up. But it makes it really hard to even try to implement that when Luka's so bad defensively. We've talked about this. I mean, Boston's entire offense is just run it at Luka, have him blow by, and then that guy either gets right to the basket or somebody cheats off, helps, and the defense collapses. They find a cutter going in the basket or an open guy in the corner for three. Like, it was just like clockwork for them in terms of what they've been wanting to do defensively or offensively. I also said that they should try to attack the mismatches more by going at Porzingis and Horford. They did do this more. Porzingis was out, but they did try to go at Horford more. And to me, that was a big reason why Kyrie got going. They were very intentional about getting Horford onto Kyrie in the first half, which got Kyrie in a nice groove, started making some shots, was getting to the basket more. And so this was an adjustment that I thought they did a good job with. But again, it didn't help that much with Luka because he was so out of it mentally. He got Pritchard onto him, and instead of attacking him, he's trying to draw fouls. He gets big guys on him. Instead of trying to make the step back three, he's falling down trying to get the foul. So it's like the strategy worked, but Luka in particular just did not execute it well. And if he's going to continue to do that, it's going to be really difficult for him and for the Mavs. I suggested they play PJ Washington at the five. They didn't do this at all, but I think this is less of a necessity with Porzingis out. I think if Tillman's going to play minutes anyway, then they can get away with the bigs. And I thought Lively actually had a bigger impact in this one than in the other games. So this adjustment was more under the assumption that Porzingis might be playing. So I don't mind that they didn't go to this. However, if Porzingis does come back, I do think it is something they still should look to at least consider in the upcoming games. And then the last one, I said to try to limit Luka's usage and play more other ball handlers to take pressure off him. Luka had a 40% usage rate in this one, so they didn't do a great job with this, but they almost kind of tried it. I mean, I just think they played the wrong guys. They gave Tim Hardaway Jr. 20 minutes. Instead, they should have given Hardy and Exum more minutes, in my opinion. And I think that we saw in the limited Exum minutes we had one time where they were face guarding Luka, Exum had the ball, and he just went straight to the basket. And that's something that, like, not everybody on Dallas can do, but he's at least a little bit of a ball handler, could be more aggressive with it. So overall, those are my suggested adjustments. Not a great showing from Dallas across the board executing them. They kind of did dare Tatum to shoot, but only for half the game. They did attack mismatches, but Luka kind of messed it up by being in his own head and just not being aggressive, actually trying to score. And then the other ones, they didn't really go to. So overall, not a great Jason Kidd game, in my opinion. However, I don't think it really matters that much. Like I said, I'm not sure these adjustments would even make any sort of a difference because, number one, the role guys have just continued to be atrocious. PJ Washington in this series is 4 for 14 from 3. That's 29%. Derek Jones Jr. is 1 for 6 from 3. And the one was the very first shot taken by Dallas in this series. So since the first minute of this series, he's 0 for 5 from 3. He's 7 for 18 from the field overall, which is 39%. He got benched down the stretch of game 3 in favor of Josh Green, which was a clearly good move because Green actually played pretty well. Josh Green did have some good minutes in this game, but only 2 3-pointers made in the entire series. He's 3 for 10 from the field overall. I already mentioned how terrible Tim Hardaway and Kleba have been. They are 1 for 14 combined in this series, just unplayable because of how bad they've shot, but also how terrible they've been defensively, both of them. And then the non-Luka and Kyrie guys from three in the series are 9 for 36, which is 25%. And so that's not going to be good enough. The only way it would even remotely maybe be good enough for them to compete is if Luka was playing how we know he's capable of, to the point where the guy's putting up 30, 40, even close to 50-point games, which we've seen him do. So to think that that's unreasonable to ask is, it's not really. But he's been such a lesser version of himself, and the role guys have been just unable to make anything. So if that's how it's going to play out, then there's really no counter move for Dallas. I think Boston is just a terrible matchup for them. They're so far away the better team. And it's just crazy how matchups work, because this playoffs has been a great example of that. Like, Minnesota matched up really well with Denver, but then they matched up terribly with Dallas. Then Dallas matches up super well with Minnesota, and then they match up terribly with Boston. Like, I think if the Wolves were in the finals, this would be a more competitive series, even though Dallas just kicked their ass in the conference finals. I just think Minnesota has better personnel and a better team to go up against Boston, because they've got more options offensively and defensively. It's just that the schematically, Dallas matched up really well with Minnesota. I think Denver would have had a much better chance of beating Boston as well. I think that would have been a really good series, but the Wolves were just built to beat them. So it just shows you the power of matchups and who you end up playing, and you can look absolutely dominant versus one team like Dallas did versus Minnesota, and then completely helpless like they do against Boston. So I'm just not sure that Dallas has the roster or the personnel to compete with Boston, no matter what sort of strategy or schemes that they implement going up against them. Now I want to take a step back and talk a little bit more big picture stuff with the Celtics in general. I want to start off with the very strange perception that the public had on this series going into it. I know that Vegas had the Celtics as pretty big favorites. They had said the third biggest one since the merger. They were like minus 225 to win the series or something along those lines. But with that said, the public opinion of the media and fans was very misaligned with that. The majority of people that I saw on big media networks and podcasts and shows and whatnot had the Mavs winning. They said that 89% of bets were placed on the Mavericks with Vegas. ESPN had a fan vote, and the fans said that 72% of people thought the Mavericks would win. And just a number of very accredited media people who picked the Mavericks. Nick Wright did so very resoundingly. Stephen A. Smith was pretty confident when he was going through it. Chris Broussard, Skip Bayless, Shaq, Kevin O'Connor at The Ringer, Draymond Green. Like, a lot of people that are very well-respected, very big personalities, very a lot of influence in the sports and NBA media world were very resoundingly picking the Mavericks. And the fan opinion was pretty similar if you looked on social media and just the way that it was being talked about in the discourse. And so this never made sense to me. I obviously picked the Celtics in this series. I did have it going seven, but I didn't have much hesitation picking them. I picked the Celtics going into the playoffs. I picked the Celtics going into the season. So I've been on the Celtics this whole time. I was not going to switch up. I felt like they were going to win going into the series. And obviously now it looks like they're going to. But the point is, they were big favorites in Vegas, and they should be big favorites in Vegas going into the series. Vegas had it right. I mean, the Celtics had five of the top seven players in the series. They had way more playoff experience across the board. Outside of Kyrie, Dallas didn't have a single meaningful rotation player that had had big minutes in the postseason beyond the first couple rounds. The Celtics have almost everybody in their rotation that's a two-way player. The Mavs cannot say the same for them. The Celtics were the better shooting team. They led the league in three-pointers made and three-pointers attempted. They have significantly more shot creators and offensive initiators and guys that can beat you on that end of the court. And I maybe wouldn't have said this before the series, but I'll say it pretty confidently now. They got the better coach as well, on top of having home court advantage, on top of being to six of the last eight conference finals, on top of the fact that they are now 79-20 on the season overall with their record, on top of the fact that they had the fourth best net rating of all time behind only the best teams of all time by most people's opinion in the KD Warriors and MJ's Bulls. Like, all signs pointed to the Celtics winning this series. The only real argument for Dallas was that Luka was the best player in the series. That was it. A lot of people like to convince themselves that Kyrie was some far and away better player than Jaylen Brown, for example. I think we've seen in this series that that's not true. And so I cannot understand where the misalignment was in terms of public perception of where this series was going to go and where it has gone. And so I'm not going to run my victory lap and say that I had the Celtics absolutely demolishing Dallas. I did think it would be competitive, but I've been Celtics all the way, and I just really didn't understand why people thought that Dallas should be the favorite in this. Not that they'd win. I understand people picking, but at a certain point, if more than half the people are picking them, they kind of are the favorite to an extent. And so they've got a chance to make a very historic playoff run here. They're 15-2, and there's only been 8 teams in the shot clock era to have only 2 losses or less in a postseason run. The 71 Bucks went 12-2. The 82 Lakers went 12-2. The 83 Sixers went 12-1. Then the 89 Pistons were 15-2. The 91 Bulls were 15-2. The 99 Spurs were 15-2. The 01 Lakers were 15-1. And the 17 Warriors were 16-1. So obviously these records look a little different for a lot of these teams because there used to be less rounds in the playoffs. There used to be less games in the first round. So the Celtics have a chance to go 16-2. There's only been 3 teams with a better playoff winning percentage or overall record than that based on the number of games played and things along those lines, with the 83 Sixers going 12-1 and the 01 Lakers 15-1 and the 17 Warriors 16-1. But the 83 Sixers had a whole less round in the postseason, so it's really hard to argue that that's a better playoff run, even though they only had one loss. So this really puts them on par with the 0-1 Lakers and the 17 Warriors. And this also makes the Celtics the only team since the playoffs moved back to a best of 7 in round 1 to go 16-2 if they win this game. The Warriors went 16-1, but nobody has gone 6-2. So they really are cementing themselves as one of the best playoff runs of all time. I know people are going to think it's not that impressive based on who they played, but whatever. If this series isn't enough to validate how great this team is, then I don't know what would have been, because all the same people that are going to shit on them and say that they had a fraud playoff run are the same people who picked the Mavericks. And how did that work out? So we'll see if they can finish the deal yet. Not going to jump to conclusions that they'll definitely win game 4, but that's just the company that they could be in. And then just talking a little bit about how dominant this series could potentially be. So there's only been 9 sweeps in the finals in NBA history. The 59 Celtics, the 71 Bucks, the 75 Warriors, the 83 Sixers, the 89 Pistons, the 95 Rockets, the 02 Lakers, the 07 Spurs, and the 18 Warriors. And so this would put the Celtics in this company as only the 10th sweep in the finals ever. But I went back and looked at how competitive some of those series were. There's only 2 series that among those that didn't have a single game that was a 5-point game or less at any point in the series, and that's the 71 Bucks and the 2018 Warriors. Small caveat to the 18 Warriors, though, is that game 1 of that series, despite Golden State winning by double digits, actually went to overtime. So there was, you could argue, it's kind of a 5-point game in some capacity. So really, the 71 Bucks are the only team that won handily every single game. And the Celtics could potentially get there. Those 2 series, the ones I mentioned, the Warriors had an average margin victory of 15 points per game. The Bucks had a 12.3. Those are the 2 highest in that span. The next highest, at least currently, outside of those, including the Celtics, is this year's Celtics with 10.7. So they're probably not going to get up to a margin of victory of 15. They'd have to win by 25 plus or something like that, but they certainly could get it above that Bucks 12.3 number. So not only will this have been a sweep, this could potentially be one of the most dominant final sweeps we've ever had, which only adds to the impressive playoff run that they've had. And I was trying to think of what's been like the least enjoyable series from a watchability excitement standpoint, and this one might be up there, I'll say, especially if they have that margin of victory that gets high enough to put them in the top 2 there. Because at least some of these other sweeps we've had, like the 2018 Warriors, game 1 was a legendary all-time game in that series. Plus, you've got LeBron James versus the Dynasty Warriors. It's just the star power in that is super fun. And then just down this list, every other series other than that Bucks series had at least two games that were 5-point games or less in the final score. So all of these really have had some close games at some point. So this series has a chance to go up there as one of the least competitive finals that we've actually ever had in NBA history. But it'll depend on this last game. Dallas could easily win the series and then this whole discussion is null and void. Or Boston could win by 30 or 25 or whatever, and then they move comfortably into that conversation. But just wanted to bring that up as a possibility in terms of where this finals could rank all time from a competitive standpoint. One other interesting thing is that this has been talked about a bunch, but this Celtics team does not have a top 3 to 4 player on the roster. Tatum is probably the best player on this team. He's probably a player that's in the 5 to 10 range, which we've talked about at length, but that kind of bucks the trend. I mean, if you go back through the past 15, 20 years, almost everybody had a top at least 4 player when they won the championship. And so I was looking back at the outliers of the cases where that maybe wasn't the case. And there's really only 2 this century that you could point to. And that's the 04 Pistons, which everyone brings up, which I previously compared this Celtics team to. But then there's the 2014 Spurs, which I actually would compare the Celtics more to. I think that's a better comp for this team because that Spurs team certainly had a ton of star power. They had Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, Kawhi Leonard. But Kawhi was still very young, had not even come close to really hitting his prime yet, was only at 12, 13 points per game that season or something like that. Duncan, on the other hand, was declined. He only averaged 15 points a game that season, though he still was very impactful, very good player, was living a bit off his reputation. But this team, there's a lot of similarities. The Spurs that year won 62 games. The Celtics this year won 64 games. The Spurs were coming off a heartbreaking NBA Finals loss to the Heat in 7 games. The Celtics coming off a bit of a heartbreaking 7-game series loss to the Miami Heat again in the conference finals. They both absolutely steamrolled their opponent in the finals. The Spurs that year had the largest margin of victory of any team in the finals in NBA history, despite the Heat even winning a game. Both of them, when they went to the finals, played a presumed top 2 player, LeBron in 2014, Luka this season, both of which had an aging co-star, the Heat with Dwayne Wade and the Mavs with Kyrie Irving. Both of them were inconsistent in the series, didn't play particularly well. Kyrie had a good game last night, but was very bad in the first 2 games. D. Wade in that series was only about 15 points per game, total shell of himself at that point. And after those guys, both teams had a pretty bad supporting cast across the board, just in terms of like guys that can create a shot for you. Neither of them really had either. They still had Chris Bosh, but again, he was on the tail end of his career as well. Both teams, the Spurs in 14 and the Celtics this year, didn't really have a true top 5 player. And both of them, it was a true team championship. That Spurs team, nobody averaged even 18 points per game that entire regular season or the entire playoffs. The Celtics obviously did have guys that were averaging 25 to close to 30 in Tatum's case. But the same sentiment is there, is that it was a by-committee approach with 4 or 5 guys that could really beat you on any given night. Between Ginobili, Parker, Kawhi, Duncan. They even had guys like Boris Diaw and Danny Green and Patty Mills and other just really high-level role players that stepped up in the biggest stage, just like the Celtics have had in this playoff run as well. And both teams were also great on both ends. The Spurs and Celtics, both top 3 defenses that year. The Celtics, the number 1 offense of all time this year. The Spurs that year were lauded for their impressive offensive performance in the postseason, and rightfully so. I mean, they were completely unstoppable with the ball movement, and it was a whole thing that people were talking about for a really long time. So I think that's a really good comp for this team. It shows that I guess you can win a title if you don't have a clear-cut top 5 guy, but if you don't have a clear top 5 guy, you've got to have someone who's close in Tatum. And I think Duncan was still like top 15-ish at that point. And you got to have a damn good team around them. Like just 4 or 5 high-level role players or even like borderline all-stars that could go get you 30 on any given night. And both of these teams had that. So that's kind of the formula. It's been a star league for decades, really the entirety of the league, but especially in the past 15, 20 years as well. And there's really only one formula to win if you don't have that. And the Celtics this year, the 14 Spurs, and to an extent, the 04 Pistons as well, with a little less star power and less offensive efficiency, have shown that's the path to doing it. And so it'll be interesting to see if other teams can replicate this. There's not a lot of teams out there that I think can afford to have the same level of role players that this team has, just with the new CBA rules. Maybe the Knicks, but I still think that they are another all-star level player away, because, I mean, let's not forget, the Celtics have two guys that are arguably top 20 players. The Knicks don't have anything close to that. So you still do need stars to an extent, but they can be slightly tier two stars if you've got just an otherworldly supporting cast, which the Celtics had this year, as the Spurs did that year as well. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Sean Jones NBA Show. Thank you so much for listening. We've got game four tomorrow night on Friday. Very likely could be the end of the series, but we'll see if Dallas can extend it and push to a game five on Monday night. But either way, we will have a reaction pod coming up afterwards, but we'll see if it's more focused on game four or the series as a whole, if the Celtics are able to win it. But with that being said, thank you so much for listening, and I will chat with you soon.